99.9 The Fan presents the Adam and Joe Podcast on WRALSportsFan.com and our new WRAL Sports Fan app.
It is so big.
The big story of the day.
Press row at PNC Arena was full last night. You were there.
Oh, I had to poach a seat.
I know you did. Well,
to see the day where I had to poach a seat. Believe me.
You know, there are two sides to the press level at PNC Arena.
Yes.
And there's the A side where all the hockey writers are.
Yeah, the serious people.
The very serious
people.
I've
never sat over there.
Neither have I, and I don't want to. I literally do not want to sit there.
Team row B.
Yeah, we're on the B side.
It was
except, and normally we sit in the old radio booth.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're doing radio, right?
Right.
So that's where Alec does, intermissions, post game, all that. You know, the aftermath is in there. On weekend games, he's there for Stormwatch. There normally does Stormwatch from the studio and then goes over to the arena. But because NBC Sports is broadcasting the playoffs.
Right.
So that's the booth they're using.
Yep.
So we got moved out of there. And the B side, there's no seats.
The caps alone had like 12 seats.
Which they didn't use, and I'm mad.
I knew they wouldn't. That was when I was going to poach.
Those were our old seats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we could have all sat there because the Capitals didn't use any of those seats. Anyway, we got a different booth. Either way.
It's fine. No, I'm used to seat poaching. Like, I've been to NCAA tournaments.
So many people there. I don't like the fact that you can't go talk to who you want to in the locker room after the game. There's too many television cameras around. With all of that said.
Yes.
We have two writers here on the show, and I'm not one of them.
You wrote.
I didn't write.
Did you not write?
I did a little preview notebook for the game yesterday.
Well, that's writing.
I did a video last night after the game because you wrote about the arena, and Alec, today you wrote about the stupidity of hockey fighting, which I am on board with. Not hockey fight, I'm on board with the stupidity of it. So we got a lot of things to talk about regarding the hockey games, and we're going to start there. First of all, quickly to the game itself. I mean, when you're down 2-0 in the series and you're playing on home ice, if you don't want to get swept, you got to win. And the Carolina Hurricanes kicked Washington's rear end up and down the ice for 60 minutes.
Yep.
It was an even game for like 6, 7, 8 minutes. And then the goal off of Fogel, I don't even know what part of Warren Fogel, his upper body, it hit when it went past Braden Holtby, but it looked like it hit him somewhere in the chest, arm.
All you have to say in hockey is upper body, right? So it's all the same part.
That's right. Anything from the waist up. They did throw a wrinkle a couple of years ago by, say, middle body.
Oh, that's right. I do remember the middle body.
I didn't know what that was.
That's really funny.
What is middle body?
Is it like stomach?
Maybe. I think Jordan Martinook might have suffered
a middle body injury or two.
A concern, yes.
Yeah.
I think you might be right with the number. Definitely, I assume, was two. Once that goal went in, and we're going to get to the fight, and after that fight, it was one-sided.
Yeah, and I was a little surprised because I thought maybe it would go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, it felt like it sort of sucked some of the air out of the arena, understandably, because that was a scary injury.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see somebody go down like that, and when you see the replay, you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
That's just your immediate thought is, wow, he's unconscious before he hits the ice. His head hits the ice really hard. That's pretty alarming.
Mm-hmm.
And understandably, I think it took some of the energy out, but they were able to sort of harness it really well.
I thought they got back to...
Oh, wait, it took the energy out? Oh, weird. Weird.
It's almost like it's...
No, Lauren, that's not how it works.
Well, initially they were all hype, and then you could, like, at a certain point, you could literally just hear everybody go, oh.
When people knew, when the crowd understood how hurt he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, people were...
And when you saw him...
You could tell.
When you saw him get, like, walked off, too, you're like, oh, boy, this is very bad.
Yeah.
I think everybody knew.
I saw the lead-up. They were going at it. It's not just to this game. They were going at it for three. This is the third game. And they were giving each other the business to use a Ron Cherry or, from my era, a Ben Dreith football referee term.
Right.
Giving each other the business for two full games. Just wax with the stick and on the arms and cross checks and pokes and butt ends and all of that. So I'm not surprised that it continued to escalate. But I saw that, and then I saw the fight, and then I saw I didn't realize Svechnikov was knocked out by the punch until I saw the replay, because we're 100 miles away.
Yep.
But I did see him hit the ice.
The way he hit the ice, you knew it was bad,
and
regardless.
I thought, oh, my gosh. I just the only thing
just
I
want
looked
him
for,
to get up.
Right. The only thing I looked for, please let there not be blood on the ice.
Right.
Because that would have meant his head actually hit the ice without the helmet.
Yeah.
It does appear that the helmet stayed on, which was...
It was hard to know for sure, though. You were definitely like, oh, boy, this is not...
But look...
Yeah.
It cast a pall over the night because everybody's concerned with not only the player but the person of Andrei Svechnikov. But from that point on, nobody would admit, but a couple of minutes after that, it became a one-sided hockey game.
Mm-hmm.
A total one-sided hockey game. And even though it wasn't, Carolina didn't really stretch it out in terms of score till later, it was total domination.
I've got to say, I'm not a hockey aficionado, as you know, but I did cover them for a little
bit. You did, absolutely.
Is one shot in a period bad? One shot on goal?
It's not ideal.
Yeah, that seemed bad.
If it goes in,
sure.
you'd probably be okay.
Then you're shooting 100%.
No, and nobody does that.
No, they don't.
That's efficiency.
Although that does seem like something that would happen against the Hurricanes.
Get Geisinger on this. If you take one shot on goal and it goes in, what are your synergy numbers?
100%.
Check out his synergy numbers.
not good. Not good. And the weird thing is that it continued in the third period.
Yeah.
Washington only got one shot for like the first 16 minutes of the third. They piled up like six or seven shots at the end of the period. That was it.
I didn't know.
I've never seen that.
I was confused as to like why they were shooting then. I was like, why bother? You made it this far. Why waste your energy? You didn't want to take any shots on goal earlier. What's the point?
I thought Carolina
they
was
played great.
They essentially the entire game was played in Washington zone.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And that's what Carolina needs to do.
Yep.
And Ovechkin and Backstrom and everybody else become invisible when they have to play defense all night as opposed to living in front of Peter Mrazek, who I thought was bored. Peter Mrazek in the second period, like, what was he doing? He was just there. Like, well, somebody's got to stand here.
Would have been great if someone brought him a sandwich and he just ate it. It would have been awesome.
Peter is a guy that might actually do that.
They're not doing the Sellies right now, which I totally get.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would like to see it if they wrapped up the series.
The ultimate...
They won't wrap it up in six, like. But if they were to.
Well, why not?
Well,
They could, but let's
say they did. can you give people one then? Come on.
Well, the ultimate celebration.
That would have been like
is the handshake line for this series.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, the way it's going.
Oh boy!
Yeah, the way it's going, we could see a fight in the handshake.
Well, you know, it's only one. Depending on your perspective, one team is doing everything wrong, the other one's doing everything right. Right? that's what I noticed on hockey Twitter last night.
Oh, hockey Twitter is.
It's lit this time of year. It's like basketball Twitter in March. It just gets dumb.
It does get dumb. Well, Twitter basically.
Yeah, but it gets like extra dumb. I think everyone's like worn down. It's the postseason.
I also think that when you get to first of all, for Hurricanes fans, I'll give them a little bit of a pass. We haven't seen hockey, playoff hockey in 10 years. You wrote about the arena and the scene last night.
Yeah.
And
it was cool.
Holy cow. I talked about this. Wilt Brinson sat in for Joe yesterday, and we had just gone through the Masters. And it had been 11 years since I watched Tiger Woods win a major. And you forget what that is like, how great that is. It had been so long since I had seen, I'd been in a building for a playoff game, I forgot just how awesome that feeling is.
Yeah.
Look, they've had full buildings before. The opener, you know, is basically a full house,
right?
Yeah. They've had full buildings.
Yeah, because someone asked me today when I was at the Thrive NCAA Media Day event, when's the last time they had a sellout? And I said, well, I think they had some this year.
No, certainly the opener was a sellout.
Yeah. But it's not the same.
But holy cow, the building was awesome last night. And I think it's going to be every bit as amazing on Thursday. And as Justin Williams said after the game, well, it's only one. Got to do it again. And they do. They have to go out. They have to win because...
Yes, absolutely.
Thursday could be it. If you don't win it,
mm-hmm.
chances are you're probably not coming back. So they have to win... game four, and if they do, who knows what happens? Like, I don't know how. Well, it was your first time in the arena for a hockey game this year, right?
Yes. Right? Well, no, but yes, for media purposes.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, how does it translate to, you've been at Cameron for, you were at Cameron for Duke Carolina. That had to be amazing. And Cameron is a little bit different, although I think the Smith Center is also great.
The Smith Center can get onto that level when it's like a really, really elite Carolina. I wouldn't even say every Carolina Duke game. Maybe like some really, really special ones, like maybe 2005, thinking all the way back to that one.
Okay, I remember that game.
Yeah, and there was some catharsis there too, I think, in that kind of game where it maybe gives the energy of the crowd a little bit more of a bump, where it's like, oh, this is like releasing some stuff right now, like some demons being released right now. So yeah, I think that adds something to it. I think it added something to it last night, I'm sure. But it was awesome, and it was very loud. I mean, it was, you know, I was surprised. And it was loud, like, late in the game with, like, when it was decided. I mean, if you wanted to beat the traffic, you could have been on the road. But most people did not seem to want to do that.
Even
was
without
impressive.
A storm surge, people stayed?
I know.
Shocking how that happened.
You know, it's playoff hockey. You got to soak it up, you know? You don't know how many more moments of the, and I think that's part of it too. I was talking to somebody before the game, one of the fans, and he was saying, "Look, you know, every year after you just kept saying, well, you know, they'll be back. They'll be back." Mm-hmm. You know, it'll happen, and here it is a decade later and it took this long.
Yeah. 9 years and 11 months. Then we had the fight.
I'm calling it 12. I'm calling it 10.
Alec, you were a big fan of the fight.
Oh God.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of it. It was really great. It really did everybody a bunch of good.
Sure.
I draw people's attention to Alec's piece on WRLSportsFan.com, which is all about how stupid fighting in hockey is.
And there's a poll. You can vote on things there, too.
They put a poll in there. Yeah, put it on the poll,
whether
Guillermo.
Whether or not you like fighting, you think it helps, you don't, whatever.
This is America.
All right. So, did it help? Hurricanes outscored Washington 4-0 after the fight, Alec.
Yeah, but on the other side, Washington lost 5-0, and they won the fight. It was crazy. They won the fight and
lost
the game.
Maybe the idea is to lose the fight.
Maybe it is.
I did have a moment where I'm sitting there watching, you know, Svesh is like limping off, and he's not with us at the time.
He's being dragged
off, yeah. Right? And then you got Ovi in there icing his hand down, and you're like, what is even the point? And like both of them, one of them hadn't fought all year, Sveshnikov hadn't. Ovechkin hadn't fought since 2010, and you're like, how did we get here right now? This is so dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, but Twitter made up their mind.
Right.
Svechnikov, it was his fault. He wanted to fight, and therefore, that's what happened.
Looked pretty mutual to me, but, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, my stance on it is that the benefits of it do not outweigh the potential negatives of it, and it doesn't correlate to wins. And if you're a person who stands up for fighting, just tell me that you like fighting – and spare me the hockey justifications for it, because there really are none.
No, I agree.
There really are none. All that can potentially happen are bad things, like your players being in the penalty box, a la Alex Ovechkin. You think the Washington Capitals were happy that their best goal scorer was in the penalty box, down 1-0 in Game 3 of the Stanley Cup playoffs?
You know what's interesting? Is that while Ovechkin was in the box for 5 minutes, you know what Washington had that they couldn't use Ovechkin on?
A power play. Right.
Yep.
And on the other side, we're now without a guy who's a pretty important piece to our team.
Mm-hmm.
And also a future star in this league, I might add. So the only things that can happen now are a penalty or an injury. Like last night, a real fight happened. And everybody thinks it's cute and fun and cool when all these faux shoving match fights happen after the whistle and all that until what can happen actually happens, which was what last night, which
was
is what happened last
fight.
Night.
That was and a real fight.
And we've spent so much time, which we've never done before, trying to parse out whose fault it was and who's to blame when the only real reason it happened is because hockey.
Yeah.
Because it's been ingrained in the sport. And we feel like it's a necessary part of the sport when it really isn't. And so many people just take this, well, it's always been done this way. And that's the lamest argument ever. We're allowed to learn. We're allowed to evolve. We're allowed to change our thinking along the way. And people have trouble with that.
You know, it's when I was a kid, my mom smoked while my sister she was carrying my sister.
Sure.
Right. That was okay. We're smarter now, right?
Yeah.
I sat in my dad's lap while he drove. None of us were wearing seatbelts.
Yeah.
That was okay now, right? That was okay. In 1971, that was cool. Right? It ain't cool now.
If we operated like that for everything, where in the hell would we be now?
There were no car seats, right? Basically, just
you put
the kid in the trunk. I don't know what you did.
No, you didn't.
I have no idea. I don't remember. But seriously, all of the things that we did then, we don't do now because we're smarter.
And, you know, as I mentioned, most of the fights that occur are the faux fight shoving matches mm-hmm. that happen. So what are we really eliminating if we do end up getting rid of it?
Who's
nothing?
Who can punch the other guy in the helmet the hardest?
Right.
That's basically what happens.
Maybe like the Champions League for hockey should just end up. Isn't that what it's called? The Champions Tour for the PGA when you're retired, so
right.
to speak? You could just be like where they fight each other, since people seem to be like really into
boxing
that.
On skates.
Sure.
We just do that.
Ooh, boxing on skates would be fun. That would really add a degree of difficulty. Apparently not to Ovechkin, who squared up like he was legit boxing. Like,
yeah.
That's what really shocked me. I was like, wow, great form, A. B,
yeah.
Terrifying,
because
that dude is huge.
Here's the thing, Alec, how many times did you and I talk this year about Svechnikov's going to be in a fight this year?
I thought it was going to happen a long time
really?
Ago.
Yeah.
And
he
has not shown any propensity to back down from even the game's biggest stars as a rookie. And I think that's stood out a lot this year.
There is an element of the sport which demands that you play in somebody's face.
Mm-hmm.
It is a sport of agitation. There's no question. It's one of the things I love most about a kid who just turned 19, is a rookie in a man's league, that he is unafraid to play and get under your skin. And Justin Williams said before,
apparently it worked,
right?
PS.
No, it did.
First
right?
fight in 9 years. Like,
absolutely.
Obviously it worked. Sorry.
So Justin Williams said during the series, like, it's all about getting under your opponent's skin and getting them frustrated and taking them off their game. And I think one of the great things about Svechnikov is that he does that naturally. That's part of his game. But we've talked about all year, Alec and I, and we sit in this booth and we go, man, it's going to happen. And Jordan Martinook's been on the ice with him a lot, and he's gotten in the way, and he has taken the fight for Svechnikov a couple of times this year, but there was nobody around. There was nobody around to separate Svechnikov from Ovechkin, and that's what happened. I said from the beginning when all those stories came out that, to me, that was two guys. That wasn't one guy asking for a fight.
Right.
That was the fault of two people, and I think
Alec... Been getting each other's skin all serious.
Right.
Yeah.
And Alec, I think you put it right. It's not the fault of them, it's the fault of the game.
People are wasting their energy trying to figure out whose fault it was for this.
Right,
I agree. The Canes fans are ticked off because their guy and their young star is hurt now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only looking at it from those glasses. But that's why I point out the football thing. Because I'm told there's a car crash on every play.
Yes.
Right? That's a physical game, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's an agitation game, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the culture of fighting isn't necessarily ingrained into the game.
Right.
I mean, if those guys wanted to, they could fight after every play, too. And sure, there's shoving and stuff, and fights do occur. And that would be another thing, too. If the fights were genuine, you know, anger, frustration-based things, that'd be one thing for me. But at this point in the game, at this point in the game, all too often, they're orchestrated, preordained.
It's the classic hold me back
things.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like waiting for someone to hold you back.
They're preconceived things.
Yeah.
So, like, they've kind of jumped the shark in that way a little
bit.
It's
grandstanding, really.
Welcome to the Take Factory.
We got other things and we got takes for them. Russell Wilson set himself a tax-style deadline, midnight on the 15th. Shockingly enough, the Seattle Seahawks met the deadline, and at midnight Pacific time, 4 years, $140 million contract extension. He's the highest-paid quarterback in football, Lauren Brownlow.
Yeah, we're riding the roller coaster of that, aren't we? I mean, that's who's next up? Like, he's probably going to become the next one.
I don't know who the...
Is it Cam? Is Cam next up?
Well, Cam is up after...
Right.
Is it after this year?
And I think Russell Wilson's deal was not up until after this year.
After this year.
So I think... And Cam's agent is known for
No, Cam has 2 more years left.
Okay,
Cam has
2 more years
left on his deal. So, yeah.
But he won't go into a last season on a deal. So, like,
at
the end of the day, Yeah, he'll be negotiating at the end of this year.
If Cam has a big year, Cam can do the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, but he has to have a big year. Look, I said this to Will yesterday. In my opinion, Russell should be the highest paid quarterback in the sport. He should be.
Mm-hmm.
He's 30. There's every indication that he is an elite-level quarterback. And elite-level quarterbacks, other than Tom Brady, to me, are kind of all in the same boat.
Yeah.
Brady's different.
Sure.
Because of the year-in and year-out success, which may or may not be attributed to him alone. I don't think it is. I think it's about the coach, but still, he's the quarterback. All the other guys just keep climbing on over each other.
Yeah.
I'm okay with
that. That's a good metaphor. Honestly, in way of putting it.
Well,
they
do.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan was the highest paid quarterback. Okay. I think Russell Wilson's better than Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
I think.
But. Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right. So Russell got paid. Real quick, before we move on, what did you think of the the video?
Russell is just, you know.
Oh, we got it. Oh, yeah. Here's Russell.
Hey, Seattle. We got a deal.
Oh my god.
Go Hawks.
That's Ciara.
I'm gonna see y'all in the morning.
Good night.
Time for y'all to go to bed.
Finally, we can go to sleep.
What is that voice?
I'll see y'all in the morning.
It's midnight.
Yeah.
He's sleepy.
He has the visual here. He is shirtless, taking a selfie video in bed with his beautiful wife, Ciara.
Yes.
I just wanted to give everyone the context here. Of the voice. He's really committed to setting that mood which for some reason is sexual, but that's fine. I suppose if I just made that much money, I'd probably feel a little bit like that, you know?
He got a $65 million signing bonus.
I wonder if he's going to talk like that all the time now. If he did, I would like him way more, by the way.
For those people who recognize the name, he sounded a little bit like Don Cornelius there.
Yeah, I could see that.
Right?
Yeah. Hear that, rather.
If he had said, it'll be a stone gas, honey, then that, yeah, exactly.
This is the quiet storm. Like, what is he doing?
That was tremendous.
He's so weird.
Yeah, he is. Well,
can he just keep talking? But seriously, if he just keeps talking like that all the time, it's fine. All's forgiven. Otherwise, he just remains like the weirdest person.
Well, at least he didn't do a southern accent pretending to be Tom O'Brien.
It's the worst southern accent.
And we move on.
Yeah.
So, no surprise, yesterday Zion Williamson declared for the NBA draft. He did it exactly the same way Cam Reddish and RJ Barrett did. Instagram video, which was clearly produced by Duke. I kind of think he did it a little bit better, smoother than RJ and Cam Reddish, but...
wonder if he took a production class. Maybe they didn't.
Maybe. Did you saw he showed up at the Duke... drama. Yeah, he showed
in
up at the play. Right.
Great play, by the way. Lin-Manuel Miranda's first.
Really?
Big one, yeah.
Very nice. So he saw the story on The Onion and decided to show up. I thought that's very good.
It's amazing.
But the real story is that apparently nobody's staying at the University of Virginia or Virginia Tech. All going. All three of the players at UVA.
Which, you know what, you kind of get because they just won a national title. Kyle Guy, I think, was the biggest one that was sort of up in the air, mm-hmm. but he's coming off winning MOP of the Final Four.
Right.
I mean, what do you do for a follow-up there? Like, there's not much to...
Joel Berry came back.
Yes. Yes, he did. But that's probably because he knew Kennedy Meek should have won it.
Right.
That's a hill I will die on forever.
I'm with you on that,
yeah.
by the way.
But yeah, I mean, and then you look across the way, their rival school. And Virginia Tech is bleeding players everywhere. Apparently.
Everywhere. Kerry Blackshear actually declared for the NBA draft, but...
slash portal.
Put himself in the transfer portal.
He put himself both places. I didn't know you could be both places at the same time, but here you are.
You can. Kerry Blackshear will not be in the same room with himself.
He will be if he stays in school, which I would imagine that he will.
Yeah.
As a grad transfer, like, he will be the best grad transfer on the market, period.
I want him to go to Pitt. Just because I want Jeff Capel to have a good team. And I think he will help them be a good team.
I'd love it if he went somewhere locally because I'd love to see him. I don't know that Carolina necessarily... I mean, anybody needs him, though. That's the thing. Ooh. Anybody needs him. Anybody needs him. He could help anybody.
Could
right
Kerry
now.
Blackshear come to Duke and ever show his face in Blacksburg again?
Sure. They don't care.
Okay.
And they seem to be fine with Buzz leaving. Like, even though Buzz not only has left, not only has, like, chased half their players into the transfer portal, of which they did not have many to begin with,
right.
He also flipped two of their signees to Texas A&M.
And they're okay with this, Virginia Tech people?
Yeah, they're football fans.
That's true. They are football fans. And real quick before we break, because Eric Cole is coming up on the other side, do we sing or just wish Bill Belichick a happy 67th birthday? I'm sorry. I want to get that right.
Wow.
Yeah, it's 67th birthday.
I'm not singing. He's got enough.
It is also today, April 16th, the 20th anniversary of the day the Patriots drafted Tom Brady.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. I think those two things kind of line up pretty well.
I guess so. Yeah, right. I think they do.
On the Alan Kelly and Company Train Hotline is the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, who picked up a much-needed win over the Washington Capitals, 5-0. 2-1 series, the Capitals lead. Rod Brindamore, before we get to the underlying story of last night's game, the most important thing really is you guys needed a win and you got it. In your wildest dreams, could you ever have imagined a game that turned out to be really, in many ways, as one-sided as it did?
Didn't see that coming, no, for sure. Obviously, we were hoping to have a good response and, get the win, which we did. I didn't, think it would unfold the way it did. But, it's just one game, right? And, we got to use the good things we did out of that game for sure. And then, hopefully translate it into the next one.
And and that's what Justin Williams was saying last night. Is like, he's just won, park it, enjoy it tonight, park it, and move on. Because I don't know, maybe it was Washington who realized that it was going to be too hard to match the level of intensity that you guys came out with last night, and maybe they just were not ready for that, even though they probably should have been.
Well, I think twofold. I think part of it is right. Like, they've been through this enough to know that it is just one game, and they were playing hard, and then I just think once it got a little bit out of hand, they weren't going to expend a lot of energy to come back to make it 3-1, 3-2, and lose, I think mm-hmm. that's kind of what happened. But good. I mean, I hope that happens again, right? I mean, we got to put them in those situations, and, I guess we'll find out.
Rod Brindamore joining us here in the Alan Kelly and Company Train Hotline. What did you guys do specifically in the game that enabled you – your team, it looked like it was a relatively easy or even start to the game, maybe two teams in a way feeling each other out a little bit. And then was it the goal that triggered it, or what were you guys doing to really make life difficult for them?
Well, there was a few things we did actually that were different, in the first two games. But really at the end of the day, I thought, they had their first scoring chance early and it didn't go in, right?
Right.
And Peter shut it down, and I think that just kind of it relaxes the group, right? If that goes in, now we're like, here we go again. We got to chase the game, and we're behind. And then, we just got going. The crowd was great last night. It was just fun atmosphere to be a part of again. You kind of brought back old memories, and I think our guys fed off it, and we just had a little more jump than our opponent, and obviously it worked in our favor.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. You experienced it a little bit differently last time, almost 10 years ago as a player, and now you're experiencing it again as a coach. How did the atmosphere compare to what you remember PNC being like with playoff hockey?
Right, the same. I think, like I said, it brought me right back to when, I was a player, I guess, been that long. But as a player, there is an emotional level there that it's hard to explain what it does for you. But when things are going well, I think it triggers you to keep pushing, and that's what you saw last night. And that's where a home crowd can really help you. Guys know that, if you get a hit in, there's going to be a big cheer. So you kind of look for that hit or look for that chance to score and maybe take that extra shot. All the things that we want to do anyway. But the crowd just was electric, and, obviously they had a lot to cheer about last night.
Can you be too amped? Can that almost work against you? Because It was. I mean, you could feel the building almost move at one point. So is there a potential for it to work the other way, or sure. Is it all positive?
Well, I mean, it can. I mean, if you get, you know, running around, that's for sure, you know, because good teams will pick you apart if you do that. But in a way, I think, I, we talked about it all year. We err on being aggressive. So to me, we're going to make a mistake. It's because we are too amped up, or we're running around, so to speak, and trying to create stuff than sitting back and taking it anyway, right? So I think it's fine for our group. That's how we played all year. And but yeah, there is a risk that, you know, you run around too much and you get caught out of place.
You said before the game that your best players had to be your best players. What did you see from your top guys last night?
Well, I saw, you know, first of all, Jordan Staal was amazing. I can't, you know, we went through the clips again today, and I mean, the stuff he was doing was just, you know, unbelievable. He went into a corner one time, and he had Wilson, Orpik, and somebody else on him, and he came out with a putt.
Yeah.
And those guys were all ended up on their, you know, their backside. And, you know, he's just, that's what he does for us, little things. And so anyway, that's one guy that was, you know, special. And I thought everyone just played well. Like, I didn't think everybody had to be great, but we don't. We just need everyone to show up. And obviously last night when we were down a couple guys, it meant that much, you know, more to have everybody on board.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue it might have been Jordan's best game as a Hurricane. He was that good over the course of the game. And I know you said it last night. Sometimes people don't notice until he's on the score sheet. He had a couple of assists last night, but he was probably the best player on the ice without it. The power play looked good. And I know people asked about why was power play unit 2, and I know you don't like to number things. Why was the Slavin Hamilton on the point power play unit so much better than the first? And your answer kind of made me laugh. Well, they shoot the puck. Why can't you get it through to the other guys?
I'm going to have you come in and you can talk to them, you know, like, because here's the thing with the other unit, you know, with Aho on and Turbo, they're naturally, you know, pass first players, right? That's what makes them great, is they see the ice, they move it around, and they're always looking for that next play to, you know, to get it in the net. Well, the problem is on the power play right now, especially in today's game, there's very few pretty power play goals.
Right.
It's killed a certain way that they don't give you those. So what they do give you, though, is a chance to get a shot and then create seconds and thirds, as we call it. And that's what we got to do a little better with that group. The other group last night got their shots in. You know, they don't always go in, obviously, but they did last night. And so we need to have that mentality going with both groups.
What did you do differently on the penalty kill? Washington scored in their first two power plays back in game one. They haven't scored since. I think it's 10 in a row. Are you paying more attention to Ovechkin, like almost somebody cheating over to his side? What are you guys doing differently?
Well, yeah, I can't really tell you that, right? I mean, I'm... You know,
well, that's true. Washington could be huddled around the radio right now.
No, what we're doing different is we went back to killing the way we would normally kill, and, you know, amping up on the aggressive side of things. And again, if they're going to beat us, let them beat us. Let them beat us with, you know, making them hard on them. You know, have to make two or three hard passes, not like you saw in the first game where it looked really easy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want that. That's we want to go get away from that. So we just changed our philosophy a little bit, and yeah, we know who their shooters are, and we're trying to get at them too. But you know, just go, be aggressive, and we'll see what happens. That's kind of the mentality we've had.
Rod Brindamore, head coach, Carolina Hurricanes, Thursday night, 7 o'clock, PNC Arena, game 4 of their opening round series. All right, I know you're tired of talking about what happened between Alexander Ovechkin and Andrei Svechnikov. I know there's a prevailing story out there that Andrei asked for it. He basically asked to fight. How did you see it now that you've had the benefit of the last, say, 18 hours?
Well, I don't have the benefit of seeing it anymore. I watched it, but now I have the benefit of talking to Andrei about it. And so, you know, that's not what happened. I'm just going to leave it at that. with you for now.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm still sick about it, to be honest with you. Like, I'm going to get my blood boiled up here just talking about it, talking about how it all went down.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, to be honest with you, Adam, the way the mainstream media is talking about it,
right,
is wrong, right, in my opinion, is really wrong. And they're going to let him off the hook on it how I see it. And that's what makes me upset about it. So, and I'm too emotional because he's, you know, he's one of our guys.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's a special kid. He means a lot to me and this group. So to see him get hurt like that, just, you know, number one, obviously frustrates me. But then to hear what you've just said, you know, make it look like he was looking for it, that's not what happened. So I've said more than I wanted to on it. So that's it.
Well, you looked emotional about it.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I don't see you as somebody who is brought to, I'm just going to use the word tears about things like this, but you looked pretty emotional about that last night.
Well, I was. I still am because I just, again, I don't, it's, that, the whole thing shouldn't happen, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. Andre doesn't have to, you know, drop his gloves after Obi drops his. Let's get real on this, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
That's part of the whole thing, too. But the kid just felt like, and what I think happened was he had to do it, right? And that's what bothers me because he didn't have to.
Right.
It's over now. I mean, it's done. I'm just happy that, you know, Andre looked good today and there's no, you know, nothing that's going to affect him long term. So we're good there. But again, not happy about how it went down. That's for sure.
All right. We also have another player, Michael Ferland, who actually left the game earlier in the game and only played a couple of minutes. So I don't know if you have updates on Ferland, and I can't imagine that Andre is going to play on Thursday. But do we have an update on Michael Ferland?
I don't. He's had something lingering that I. You know how this goes, Adam. Mm-hmm. Where you can't say what it is. It's so stupid, really, to be honest with you. But he's—I would say—very doubtful,
right,
to play. Because so I'm counting. I'm not counting on him. We got practice tomorrow, and then we'll figure it out. So we're looking at probably having to bring somebody up potentially right now.
By the way, I would just list him as having the sniffles.
Okay.
We'll do. I think Michael will appreciate that. So if you bring somebody up, and look, we know who fans would want to see, but I know that they're not going to see. I mean, is your option just a depth guy who's maybe been at this level before or is more mature, who would be comfortable with maybe playing a very, very limited role? It doesn't seem to be a lot of options. Two guys with NHL experience, really, Kuokkanen and Clark Bishop are both kind of injured or on the mend.
Right. So everything's on the table for us. I mean, I think we're going to approach it tomorrow. You know, there's another element here, too, is that Calvin Dahan is kind of lingering around, you know,
right.
And it could be potential in there. So, you know, do we dress 7D? You know what I mean? Then we don't really need to bring anybody up. So we're kind of, everything's on the table right now. And I think until really Thursday, we probably won't have a final decision on that.
So, yeah, I mean, look, I know you said it last night and I've talked to Justin about this. The guys like to play. So if you've only got, you know, and really, I mean, for many of many games, you've been playing 10, maybe 11 forwards at most anyway, as you get closer to the end of the game and the bench is getting shortened. It's probably easier for you, and I know you said it last night. The guys you put on the ice last night were tremendous. We hope Andre can come back. And I know it was fun. It's going to be fun in there Thursday night. It's going to be an absolute madhouse at PNC Arena. I was just looking real quick before we let you go. I was looking on YouTube. So you fought Matthew Barnaby after scoring a goal in 2002?
No, I didn't. He jumped me after I scored. I'm so mad. I'm so mad about that. He suckered me. I remember driving home after the game. I had this big welt in my eye, and I was like, you know, I score a goal, and he jumps me, and then, you know, I tried to grab on, and it was a melee, but he got the punch in first, and I'm still mad about that because he sounded – I heard him the other day talk about it, like he beat me up, and I'm like, seriously? Anyway, so those things still frustrate me, right?
Oh, man, you're the best. Congratulations on the win. I hope, first of all, I hope these guys can get back up for it because it's going to be – I think Thursday is going to be an absolute battle.
I hope so. Thanks for the time.
You've been listening to the Adam and Joe podcast from 99.9 The Fan. Don't forget that you can stream the show live at WRALSportsFan.com and our new WRAL Sports Fan app in the iTunes and Google Play Store.